Hi, and welcome to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast. I'm Mark Simon. On this episode, we're joined by North Carolina sophomore standout Vance Honeycutt. He's a center fielder who plays good defense and has a penchant for home run robberies, as do some of his teammates. We'll talk about that. And then we nerd out a little bit with Ben Clemens of FanGraphs. Ben writes a weekly column on five things he likes in baseball each week. We modified it slightly. Three things we've each liked from the first month or so related to defense. Let's get to it. We're joined by North Carolina center fielder Vance Honeycutt. Vance had a huge freshman season for the Tar Heels. He was a third-team All-America selection ACC Championship MVP last year. As a sophomore, he was named Preseason Player of the Year, hit a big homer the other day in a win over top 15-ranked East Carolina. His defense has been A+. That's why we wanted to talk to him. He's got a couple of homer robs to his ledger and a collection of impressive plays that were shared online by the UNC Baseball Analytics team. That's what we want to talk to him about. Hey, Vance.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. So we're a defense first podcast, and the first thing that we always ask people is the first great play that you can remember making at any level defensively.
I would say I came in to college as an infielder, and that changed pretty quickly. I think by day two, I was put in the outfield. And I would say the first play I remember making, you know, that was kind of sparked my eye when it was in the fall. We were doing kind of some inter-squad scrimmages, and a ball was hit. Ball was hitting the gap, and you know, I was just kind of running at it, laid out for it. And you know, at first I was like, "Ah, this is pretty fun," just because you can kind of run after balls, and it's not like the infield; you can kind of just let your speed play. So, I would say probably in the fall of my freshman year, just noticed that I could get to some more balls with my speed.
Nice. Did you, when you were playing like Little League, Legion, team, whatever, growing up, did you make any home run robberies there?
No, sir. Like I said, I was always an infielder. I'd never played in the outfield before college. So, I would say, you know, just making a backhand sliding play at shortstop and, you know, throwing it over to first. That was probably some of the earlier memories.
Nice. So I want to go back to the infield outfield transition and what that was like. And you said that you appreciated the ability to kind of roam more. What was the hardest part of that transition?
Definitely getting, you know, good reads off the bat. You know, you're farther away from home plate. So having that good pre-pitch routine, pre-pitch setup, our outfield coach, Coach Howe, and then guys that were, you know, older than me, like Angel Zarate, you know, they kind of emphasized those things early on. And it was a big learning curve for sure. But having those guys in your corner just trying to help you every single day was a huge help.
So that's interesting that you would say that, because in the plays that I was watching that the analytics team tweeted, it seemed like your jumps were great. Like, you seem to have a pretty good read of the ball off the bat. Is there anything that you've learned in particular that's allowed you to do that?
I would just say going back to a pre-pitch setup, kind of having a little right-left stagger, getting down in an athletic stance, you know, being able to see the ball off the bat well, because, you know, at the beginning, I was just kind of straight up and down and just kind of, you know, I was getting late reads. I was still able to get the balls, you know, in the gaps, but I didn't have that great of jumps. So I would just say, you know, focusing on a pre-pitch setup, trying to stay athletic and, you know, just having your eyes, you know, just being really locked in at the plate.
Have you had any experience in terms of something that a lot of major leaguers talk to us about, the idea of reading the swing?
Yeah, for sure. You know, this year we implemented a new way to call pitches, and that's a little wristband. And, you know, you can kind of, and, you know, the infielders have it. And then in the preseason, I actually had it for a few scrimmages. And, you know, like, I think that's a huge help because you can kind of know what pitch is coming, and you know that, you know, if the guy's been late all day and, you know, a fastball's coming, you can kind of shift more towards the opposite field gap, stuff like that, and vice versa with off-speed pitches. But, you know, just kind of seeing where they're at, you know, the hitter per pitch, and just trying to stay on top of that is definitely a big key.
So on a lighter note, you're Robert Vance Honeycutt IV. Were any of the three Roberts before you, I know your dad, but were they particularly good baseball players? Were they particularly good defensively?
I know my dad was. I don't think my grandfather or great-grandfather played. I definitely know they didn't play in college, but yeah, you know, from an early age, my dad would always kind of be on me about defense and, you know, just, I mean, in baseball in general, you know, hitting, defense, all of it, but he just wanted me to try to be a, you know, a smart baseball player, and, you know, the athleticism would come, the skills would come, but, you know, I know my dad played here for a few years and, you know, he could always swing it. He could play anywhere in the infield, so I'd say just having him in my corner was also helpful.
Now, your sprint speeds have been, you know, peak. They've been elite as measured, as I said, by your analytics team. Your mom ran track. Did you get your speed from her?
Yes, sir. I think my dad wants to claim it, but I think we all know where I got it from.
Is your mom a good athlete?
Absolutely. She ran track here. She ran the mile and the 2 mile, plays tennis, you know, runs a lot. So definitely one of the best. Yeah, I think she's probably one of the better athletes in the family.
Nice. So I want to talk about these home run robberies because someone alerted me to them and then I wound up watching them and I was pretty wowed. I guess in particular, you got the one last year against Georgia. You got the one against Pitt. Our guy was telling me that you've got others and that your teammates have others. And I'm just curious if you can walk us through maybe those two in particular and how you were able to make those plays.
Yeah. Well, last year, the one against Georgia, the wind was blowing out hard in that regional. I don't think that ball it should not have gone out of the ballpark. You know, I was playing, you know, pretty straight up and I get to probably a couple feet before the warning track. And I was like, okay, this ball's going to hold up right here. But, you know, it just kept going. And, you know, our outfield coach, Coach Howe, always emphasizes that, you know, if we're playing at home, you know, like this is our home park. So we need to be able to, you know, like read the wall. We need to be able to do all those things right. And you know, just kind of be smart at home, especially because, I mean, this is our home park. So, you know, I get to the wall or I get to the warning track and I know you have about 5 feet. So I took that last one or two steps and just kind of jumped up and luckily I was able to come down with it. And then at Pitt, you know, the conditions weren't great. We were playing in, I mean, it was 20 degrees and snowing and the wind was howling everywhere. There's a big outfield out there. So we were kind of playing in because of the wind and, you know, their guy just smoked the ball dead center and there it's turf. So you don't really know the warning track. But I knew I didn't have that much room, so I just kind of jumped up, and luckily I jumped at the right time.
Yeah, and so that was a heck of a catch. It's interesting that you talked about warning track awareness. Doug Glanville is someone that we've talked to him about with regards to that. How quick were you able to kind of pick up on that? Did you have any wall crash moments in the early part of your outfield days?
I wouldn't say crashes as much as, you know, just trying to be okay with, you know, at least at the Bosch, you know, our outfield wall is padded, so, you know, we were always taught, and you can't be scared of the wall. If the ball takes you into the wall, you know, you just kind of have to eat it. So I would say there was one time, the first time I kind of had the first little collision with the wall. I was playing right field and I was running after a ball in the gap and I just kind of jumped up and I made the catch and I just kind of smoked the wall. And that was probably the first true collision I had with it. But, you know, just like I said, you know, you really want to just kind of learn the field, you know, before you play it. So, you know, even if that's at home or if that's away, you know, always try to get some balls off that wall and get the reads to know, just try to understand the wall.
We were just talking to Miles Straw, the Guardian center fielder, and he was talking about his pregame prep and the level to which he does that. And certainly sounds like you're on the right track with that. Your teammates have some too. Can you tell me about their home run robberies?
Yeah. So Casey Cook, we were playing Virginia in game 3 at home, trying not to be swept. And it was a 0-0 ball game and Kyle Teal smoked the ball to right. And I know I see Casey going back and just trying to scream at him. There's the wall. And he jumped up and the ball was going to leave the yard and he caught it. Or I guess he kind of caught it. He was in his glove and it flew out of his glove. And, you know, he's laying on his back on the warning track and the ball just comes right down into his hand. It was probably the craziest catch I've ever seen out of a first year outfielder who, you know, also came in as an infielder. So, you know, that kind of just speaks to his athleticism and work ethic. And then, you know, Patrick Alvarez also, we were at Notre Dame and, you know, he's a shorter guy and, you know, there's a big wall out there and kind of the same thing. I was screaming wall and, you know, he went up and he had the ball over the wall and then it came out of the glove and then the ball was just kind of floating and, you know, he came down with it also. It's not your bunch of normal catches, but, you know, it makes for a great play and a great story.
It does indeed. And home run robbery is certainly big in our world, in the world of defensive run save. Do you use data at all in anything you do, whether it be fielding or hitting?
I'll say we use data more in the offensive side of the game, for sure. You know, with the resources now available to kind of, especially with the pitchers we're going to see, if that's, you know, a weekend series or a midweek, you know, we have a little hitting machine that, you know, allows us to manually type in the metrics of that pitcher's pitches. So fastball at 2300 spin rate, you can kind of put that in there. You can set the velo up. And then, you know, same thing with at the plate, you know, launch angle. We don't focus on that too much, but, you know, we try to obviously stay with the line drive approach. So we know that, you know, the launch angles need to be where they are if you want that line drive.
Let's stay with hitting for a second. Notice that your walks are up this year. Is pitch recognition been a big thing for you?
Yeah, for sure. last year, you know, I got exposed, you know, middle of the year with my swing, and, you know, they just started spinning me sliders in the dirt, you know, heaters, you know, up in the zone, and, you know, I wasn't able to lay off of them. And I, you know, kind of got with our hitting coach, Coach Wierzbicki, and, you know, he never says no whenever you ask him if you want to, you know, to get some extra swings. You know, we just kind of talked about, you know, like what we need to be able to do to, you know, eliminate those strikeouts best we can. And that's just, you know, just trying to recognize the zone, because it wasn't as much as I was missing balls in the zone. You know, I was getting swings off on those pitches, but I was swinging at balls outside the zone that, you know, you're not going to be able to do that if you want to be successful at this level. So I would say just, you know, pitch recognition, being able to slow the game down, having a good routine in the box, staying as calm as possible would definitely help me out with that.
Bring down the chase rate for sure. Last one. I know that you don't like to necessarily cite examples of major leaguers, but if I comped you to Michael Harris in terms of the way that you played defensively, would you be pleased with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a huge Braves fan, and he's a stud out there. He's really fun to watch.
And he's very good at going back and getting them, that's for sure, as you are. Vance Honeycutt, we look forward to you racking up defensive runs saved in the majors in a few years. Best of luck at UNC in the ACC tournament, hopefully further than that and beyond. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
And we're joined by Ben Clemens, writer for FanGraphs. Ben writes a weekly column, Five Things I Liked or Didn't Like This Week, that has become my new favorite thing. I really enjoy it. I like looking at it. I've DM'd Ben a few times about it. He picks out specific moments in games or finds themes or just things that he likes or enjoys about a player or something as weird as odd ways to tag or fake tag. So we're going to spin it off here. Three things we liked in 2023 defense related. Hey, Ben, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's do this. You go first. What's your first?
All right, I've got a very niche one. So Gabriel Arias is a shortstop prospect for the Guardians, and they don't need a shortstop. They don't need a second baseman either. They're playing Amed Rosario every day at short, and they're playing Andrés Giménez at second every day, and Zay Ramírez is playing third. The infield's crowded. And so they've just used him all over the place this year. He's played first, third, second, outfield, and he's played two games in the outfield, and he has no outfield assists, and he doesn't have enough throws to qualify for any arm strength leaderboards. But he has an absolutely absurd arm. And I was watching them play the Tigers, and the Tigers didn't have a scouting report on him in the outfield, which makes total sense. And they were just running foolishly and got very lucky not to run into some outs. It's so fun to watch him in the outfield. I mean, I don't think he knows the angles whatsoever. It's not his spot. Like, I don't blame him. But he just comes up looking to throw everybody out. It's like flat on a line. You know how sometimes you're like, oh, I can't believe Randy Arozarena tried that throw. Like, there's no chance of getting this guy. Arias, every throw he takes, he's trying to like one hop the third baseman from 200 feet. And like, he's like pretty good at it. It's awesome to see just the combination of really, really good physical skill at this and just irrational confidence because he hasn't played the outfield enough to know when not to.
Is this like a Vlad kind of thing?
Yeah, it's kind of similar. Like, I don't think it's kind of that off the charts, but it really just pops out because, like, that's not really, like, not really Cleveland's thing. Cleveland's thing is playing fundamentally sound, and, like, Stephen Kwan's a really good outfielder, but I'm not seeing, like, highlight throws by him. And then Arias is just, like, he's just going for it. And it's really fun to watch because I just don't think he knows, like, when he should ease off a little bit. And maybe he'll learn that eventually and it'll become less fun. But I watched two plays at third base just in his one game where I thought, no one's even going to throw to third here. And then it was bang, bang. And if they had a challenge, I think they might have challenged and won one of them. They'd previously lost the challenge. The guy just has an absolute cannon. And I don't think he's going to end up in the outfield long term. Like, I think Rosario's on the move there, that they're probably just looking for a suitor. That's the way they do things. But I kind of hope I'm wrong. Or that, like, Tyler Freeman forces them to keep Arias in the outfield because he's really fun as an outfielder.
So, all right. So you're giving us a player to watch as your first one. My first one connects back to Vance Honeycutt a little bit. And that is the early season hit a homer, rob a homer games. There have been four of them so far this year. Luis Robert Jr., Kevin Kiermaier, Aaron Judge, and Will Myers. Four. You're like, oh, this is something that like shouldn't happen that often.
That sounds like a ton.
Right. Well, it does. Like, that was my thought too, except that it happened 7 times last year and it happened 10 times the year before that. It is not an unusual thing. It's a big deal because it looks really cool. A guy hits a home run, a guy robs a home run. Aaron Judge has done it three times in his career, which in our 20-year database is tied for the most with Nick Markakis. But it's not like this. It's not like a 1 in 20 years kind of thing. It might be like a 1 in 5 years or 8 years, or I think for the Reds it was like 10 years for your team. But it's not something that's like a. We're not going to be calling it historic anywhere, I don't think.
So is Aaron Judge like the best player for this ever? He's like 8 feet tall and it's a lot of home runs.
Well, yeah. So he would certainly be one. Kyle Tucker's in a really good position to get a lot of them because he's playing right field in Houston and he's got ups and he's got the short fence in right field and they get a lot of home run robberies and he's going to hit a lot of home runs. So those are kind of like if you were drafting guys, I think those are probably your top two picks. Mookie Betts. Or someone with a short fence in right field, you could pick a guy in Fenway.
Yeah, that Luis Robert robbery was outrageous, by the way. Like, he should get credit for two for that. I was watching that game, and I, like, shrieked.
So, I was thinking about, like, best home run robberies of the season so far, and in prep for something else that I'm going to bring up, Matt Vierling has a really good one, too, where he shouldn't have quite... absolutely shouldn't have caught the ball, and he caught it, like, going back up against the fence, and it's a fantastic catch, and we'll get into it. We'll get into it with the Tigers in a second. But so that's my first. We got your first. What's your second?
So this one is another one that I don't really have any metrics for, which is kind of the best kind of how I've been doing these. But so the Cubs have Nick Madrigal as a frequent infield contributor. And if you know like two things about Nick Madrigal, it's that he doesn't strike out and he's a little guy. But that's his kind of player archetype. And you know, those guys are fun. I like them a lot, actually. I probably like them more than they are valuable. But those are second basemen, right? Like that's how that works. They play second base because they're very smooth. Their infield actions are good. They tend to be quite agile. It's like 5'8". He doesn't have arm strength to play third base. That's just how it is. Like, it's really hard to have a big enough arm to play third at Nick Madrigal's size. You can, but basically no one does. Except the Cubs decided to play Nick Madrigal at third, and they have off and on this year. Now, I mean, that's fine. Like, they're playing Nico Hoerner at second, and Nico Hoerner is a transcendent defensive second baseman. So, like, he should be a shortstop, and he's bumped over to second because of Dansby. So, like, look, they just think second-base defense is more important because it's in the middle. So, they do that. That's okay. That's why Madrigal's at third. Nico Hoerner is hurt right now. And so, instead, the Cubs have called up Christopher Morel, and he has a cannon arm. Like, just enormous arm. So, he's kind of the anti-Madrigal. Like, he's big. He has power. He has power. He might strike out too much. He's 99th percentile arm strength in the Statcast. And he's, like, I guess he's not huge. He's 6 feet, but, I mean, that's huge compared to Madrigal. Madrigal has 14th percentile arm strength. But the Cubs don't want to mess around with Madrigal playing time overall. And so they're playing Madrigal at third and Morel at second. And you just watch the game, and the throws don't make any sense. Like, it's amazing how well our brains are accustomed to the way that things should work. Because Madrigal is, like, taking two steps into his throw from third to first and kind of, like, put a little arc on it anyway. And Morel is nose-stepping it. And the first baseman is like, oh my God, don't kill me. Like, they're so miscast. And there are innings where you see plays to both of them. And you just look at it and it's like, this feels wrong. Like, something is not right here. And it's amazing both how they can both play each position. Like, Madrigal is not a bad defensive third baseman. He's a good defender. And Morel is fine at second base. Like, both of them seem to work pretty well.
I've got some stats for you off that. One, Cubs are the best team in the majors right now at turning ground balls and bunts into outs. They have the highest percentage rates, them and the Diamondbacks. So what they're doing is working.
Yeah.
The other thing is with Morel last year at third base, he played 18 games, about 140 innings. He had 4 errors, which, okay, that's not great on its own. But we also track what we call defensive misplays. And we have 60 categories of defensive misplays. And he had 4 more of those. So he's got 8 mess ups, essentially, in 140 innings. I don't have the stuff in front of me. That's a bad ratio. That's not good stuff. So I think they're somewhat warranted in their decision. Whereas when they put Morel at second, he's kind of less likely to do harm. He only had 3 misplays and errors in about 240 innings. So I guess it's
he's a second baseman.
Yeah, he's a second baseman who happened to, or they're still trying to figure out probably what he is. And Madrigal, I guess it's like they got to play him somewhere, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, he's just a good defender, Madrigal. Like, he can play third. Like, it's funny. It looks weird because he's like really, really working to get those throws across the diamond. And like, he's never going to be Nolan Arenado for that reason. But he's just a really good defender. Like, his great reflexes, great instincts. So I'm sure it'll work there. It's just, it's amazing to me how, like, I've watched baseball all my life, and I watched this game, and I didn't come into it knowing that their arm strength was such a mismatch, but by, like, the third inning, I thought, what the heck? Like, what's going on here?
Madrigal had 4 defensive runs saved at third base. At second base last season. He's got 2 in, you know, a teeny sample. But yeah. Basically, it doesn't necessarily tell you that much.
But he can pick it. Like, sample size is going to get bigger, and he's going to keep being a good defender. I have no doubt in that, just from, like, his minor league pedigree, just how he looks. Like, he's really smooth.
So the cool thing is, I'm going to give you my second, and you're going to give me your third, and we're going to stay at third base for both of these, which I think is fun.
Base defense.
So there was a play in the Giants-Astros game that illustrated, like, 5 different things, ranging from how Wilmer Flores can make a Nolan Arenado-esque kind of play to, boy, defensive metrics cover a lot of different things, but they don't exactly handle this situation exactly how you wish that they handled this sort of situation. I sent you a play. If you watched it on TV, it was essentially a ground ball at third base that was hit really hard that looks like it eats up Wilmer Flores at third base.
Yeah, so you sent me the TV view, and I was like, wow, like, he's just suddenly moving twice as fast as Wilmer Flores. Like, what a play. He hasn't made a play like that ever.
Right, and he gets his body in front of it, and he just kind of, like, makes this incredible stop. But what we don't know is what was happening before everything happened. This play wound up having a 5% out probability because Wilmer Flores was not really close to that ball in terms of pre-pitch positioning. He just wasn't. However, the Giants had decided that they were going to backpick the runner on third base. So as the pitch is starting to come to the plate, you see Wilmer Flores doing his Wilmer Flores, you know, first percentile sprint speed,
like,
moves at their base. Right. And he winds up essentially running into the baseball, which is coming out of it, like, super fast.
The reason that the play looked so, like, wow, sprawled out to make it, I think, is that he looked up and was like, here's a baseball. Oh, my God.
And then he's in such good position for it. And the hitter was Mauricio Dubon. And he just kind of softly tosses it to first base, like, 55 miles an hour, gets him no problem. And I look at the defensive metrics, it's a 5% out probability play, which, if you think about it, is fair if you're basing it on pre-pitch positioning. He's not close to the ball. The ball was hit really, really hard, but he gets there not necessarily because of anything that should have happened. He essentially gets there by accident. But our metrics are essentially going to treat that. And I would imagine that's Baseball Savant, StatCast 2, and any system that's doing this sort of thing, they have to treat it as, like, this incredible defensive play.
That's, like, pinpointing where the fielder is when the pitch is released.
Right, exactly. And he's not close. He gets close because you can't, like, we can't measure intent. StatCast can't measure intent. We don't know. Maybe Wilmer Flores had this premonition that the ball is going to be hit to this spot really, really hard, and he gets there. But no, it wasn't that. So in our world, and I would presume most defensive metric worlds, he's getting credit for this incredible play. I just think it's cool that, like, the system exists. These systems exist, but you can't necessarily account for every single possible thing that's going to happen. Plus, it is somewhat of a one-of-a-kind kind of play because he's going to third base to try and backpick a guy who he's not even going to get because the guy was close to the base, and he makes the play. Anyway, I tend to pick on Wilmer Flores. That one I thought was kind of funny, and that was something that I liked this year so far.
I thought it was really, I think it's a really interesting question of how to handle intent. I mean, I feel like the practical answer is that you can't, and look, defensive systems have a lot of noise anyway, just for lots of reasons. And just to add this one, like, what if he was back picking and the ball was hit to where he was before, then he'd miss his 95%er, and maybe in the long run this evens out. But yeah, I think this kind of gets at why it's really hard to measure defense.
Yeah, we don't dispute that here. We do the best that we can. We promote defense, runs it like crazy. But we acknowledge that, like batting average, like any other statistic, it's not necessarily a perfect world.
I think that gets at why it's so important to be rigorous about measuring it, because it's just so easy to mess up that, like, that's why it's so important to have these, like, systematic ideas for how to measure it, because, man, it's tough. Like, you think measuring hitting is hard? It's comparatively a walk in the park. So, yeah, I think this is a great way of illustrating that.
Sure.
And it was just a really funny play, too.
So we go from one end of the spectrum, which is Wilmer Flores, to the other end of the spectrum. What's your third?
So my third is Ke'Bryan Hayes moving left. And just completely by coincidence, you told me that you wrote about Ke'Bryan Hayes moving right last year. And I mean, I think the real answer here is that Ke'Bryan Hayes is just the best third baseman in baseball defensively. Like, I mean, Arnaut is great.
Well, Cardinal fans will dispute that. If you want to do nice words with them, many Cardinal fans will dispute.
You can make an argument for Arnaut. I think that, and Matt Chapman's good too, but Ke'Bryan Hayes is outrageous. And also, again, third base defense is really fun to watch. And so I end up watching a lot of Pirates and Cardinals, and he's just a blast. So last year, you know, did he have the most DRS at third base last year?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he also had the most outs above average. Like, this guy is just, he's just a tremendous third base defender. And last year, you know, he was good enough about making plays going to his right for you to write about it because it's awesome. It's really fun to watch him make that play. He's really smooth. He also is great going left, and he's actually the best third baseman in baseball going left this year. And in particular, there's this one play that I said to you before this. It's a little bit old now. It's from April 20th, where he just lunges left into the hole to snag a ground ball, but it's a double play ball, and he's on the ground, essentially. And there's just going to be no way to make this throw. And so he came up with the only thing he could do to make the throw, which was jam a leg up, like his right leg. Both of his legs were on the ground, and he just popped one leg up to get enough feet on the ground to put some mustard on it and threw like on his butt, but with one foot up somehow, with as much velocity as like a regular throw from third to second to complete a double play. And look, I don't know, a lot of third base defense is reflexes and having a big arm and like just having your first step be great. But this is just like, it's just a different level. No one conceives of plays like this. And there's no way he's practicing these plays. He's just that good and that instinctual that he's like, oh, what do I do here? You know what? I'm just gonna stick one leg up, then throw from my butt using that foot for leverage. And then it'll be fine. I'll turn a double play. I'll hit the glove perfectly. It's just a joy to watch him. I mean, go any direction, but going left this year, I've seen a few plays where it's just like, come on. And I just laugh.
The day that he did that, we tweeted out, most defensive runs saved by a third baseman since 2021. Ke'Bryan Hayes, 44. Nolan Arenado, 27.
Yeah, so. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, yep. Yeah, I'm a Cardinals fan, and I like Nolan Arenado, and I think it's really cool that he's won a gold glove every year he's been in the majors. Ke'Bryan Hayes, just, oh my God.
Defensive run saved. Ke'Bryan is as good as it gets, has been, and seems like will be. He was our defensive player of the month for April. So my last one is about the Detroit Tigers, and it's about something that hopefully by the time this comes out, I will have written about it. The Tigers, people might have noticed that they are in the top couple of teams in defensive runs saved this year. Their outfielders all have good numbers. Among other things, they do have two home run robberies, which is a part of it. But there's another aspect to it, and that's that we track batted balls, and we classify them into ground ball, line drive, fly ball, pop-up, etc. But we also have categories called liners, which is liner, which is a ball that essentially has the arc of something close to a line drive, but it's hit somewhat in the air. And then we have liner flies, which are kind of like, they look like fly balls, but they're not exactly. And we have
like a little low, right?
Yeah, exactly. A little like a under 5 second hang time kind of fly ball. And if we track all these things in different categories, and that's how our out probabilities are conceived, essentially. So the Tigers this year on what we call flyner liners, at the time that I checked this, there had been about 80 flyner liners hit against them this year, and they have caught about half of them. It was like 40 out of 82 or something in that rate.
That seems really good.
It does. It's very, very good. And I think instinctively you would just say that. The average catch rate on a flyner this year, knowing nothing else other than that the ball is a flyner, is 33%. So they're essentially at 40 in a world where they should be at 27 to 28. So I went and looked, and they have some really nice catches within that. Some of them are less impressive, but Vierling has turned the flyner into like his specialty this year. He's got some really good ones. Riley Green's got a couple. Keel Badu's got a couple. Kerry Carpenter's got a couple. So right now, they are the number two outfield in defensive run save. They're the number one outfield in turning batted balls into the outfield into outs. And I don't know if it's going to hold up. I don't know if these guys are the real deal or not, We're going to find out, I think, because those guys are the guys that are going to play.
Yeah, it's not right. Like, there's no one behind them.
The thing that I think is nice about it is there aren't many appealing things about the Tigers these days. They play better of late, yeah. But this kind of gives you a watchability. If you were going to add something in terms of watchability for them, I think this is it.
Vierling, like, sneaky great player. I mean, not great, but sneaky good player. I think he's a lot more interesting than he gets credit for.
He's certainly made a significant impression in Detroit, I think, both offensively and defensively. He was very much one of those, like, if they didn't get him, you feel like the Giants would have gotten him. And yeah, Scott exactly. Harris comes over and he makes a move like that. Like, he's the ideal Giants. We're going to squeeze him in. We might not play him every day.
Yeah, he's like kind of platoony and like,
right.
plays better outfield defense than you think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it very much fits the mold.
Cool. So, Ben Clemens, you got another release coming up on Friday, right? We're looking forward to reading that. They are excellent. They are free, and you can find them at fingrifts.com. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark.
And this wraps up this episode. For Vance Honeycutt, Ben Clemens, and our producer, Justin Stein, I'm Mark Simon. Thank you for listening to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the SIS Baseball Podcast. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you have any questions, email the show at mark@sportsinfosolutions.com or tweet us @sportsinfo_SIS.